Senator Coghill, Senator Lyerson.
We'll take up,
You have to leave.
Might for a few minutes?
Just for a few minutes, just to do an interview and I'll be right back.
Why don't we take up, Senate Bill 506 then, while Senator Fake has to...
Do we get another person here? Senate Bill 506, excuse me, an act exempting, certain employment of line haul truck drivers from overtime wage requirements. We have a China procedure, Senate Chief. Thank you. Tom Stewart, Department of Labor. For the record, my name is Tom Stewart. I'm the Director of Labor Standards and Safety, Department of Labor. We've just had a few minutes discussion, with Mr. Jansen, Lennon, on this formula. And, we really need a little more time to get with the industry to check some other companies to see how this line haul issue works in relation to the state of Alaska overtime laws. If in fact it is an equivalent to our requirements, and I don't think we'll have any problem. We're really not in a position right now, Mr. Chairman, to really on.
Thank you. Fine, I understand there was some communication going forward and we thought you might be late this time, that's all right. We'll have Jim Jansen. We're not on teleconference, Jim, so.
Okay. Thank you, Senator. My name is Jim Jansen, and I'm the president of Linden. I think, are kind of the sponsor of this, the trucking industry, and our situation is this. The traditionally long-haul truck drivers have been paid by the mile for a lot of reasons, and this is done based on the desires of management, the drivers, and the labor unions, because we believe it's the best way to pay line drivers. We found that we may be in violation of the statute, overtime statutes, by virtue of a long-term system of paying drivers, and we're asking to get the statutes changed to meet the current method of pay and what we consider the best method of pay. What we do on long-haul trips, and a long-haul trip is a trip, say, in excess of 100 miles, is we pay so much a mile, for example, 50 cents a mile, whether it's straight time or overtime. And we leave the decision on roll and rest to the driver, because it's the safest way to operate a line haul truck. If he wants to run 2 hours and take a coffee break, under the current system, he can do that. If he needs to stop, he stops. If he's fresh and he wants to run 8 hours and then sleep for 14, in the current system, he can do that. If he's tired after 6 hours, again, he can stop, and after 6 hours, jump in the sleeper and rest. If we get into enforcing, like normal work, where you work 8 hours, if you work past 8, you're on overtime, and management starts to enforce work 8 and then stop, where really we're dictating is roll and rest rhythm, which is not the best system for a driver. It's a little bit like traveling on vacation. You travel at what rhythm works for you. If you're tired after 4 hours, you stop. If you're not tired, you may drive for 9 hours. So for that reason, we've negotiated all of our labor contracts for long-haul drivers a rate that is a blend of straight time overtime, a rate per mile. It's a form of piecemeal pay, so that we know the cost of our trips. The driver that wants to run harder longer can. The driver can't run too long because of our federal standards. Alaska has adopted the DOT regulations, which dictate how many hours in a day he can drive, how many hours without stopping, how many hours in an 8-day period. So there is controls on how much he can drive. But what we did in our last labor negotiation with the Teamsters, we attempted to, well, basically we first agreed to what a mileage rate would be, agreed it was a blend of straight time, overtime. And with the lawyer's help, we tried to come up with a method of making sure we weren't in violation of the current laws. And basically, we couldn't do it. Like most lawyers, they tell you it's a gray area. But the only real solution to being legal and still use this best system was to get legislation to do the job. So that's what legislation does.
Thank you, Mr. Jensen. Senator
Kula.
Coghill?
Jim, are you subscribed pretty much to what Mr. Stewart from the Department of Labor said, that there's other carriers that he wants to touch base with, and are you in that loop to make sure that everybody is conformed or everybody's satisfied?
Yes, Senator. In fact, we had a meeting of the Trucking Association, discussed this, and this is a bill totally supported by the Trucking Association.
Well, if it's, Chairman, if it's totally supported by the Trucking Association, what is our holdup? Why don't we move it along? You heard what Mr. Stewart said, that there were contacts with other trucking.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's what he said. I think
we've discussed this a couple of times. Yes, we've talked, and certainly it's prudent to make sure there's no opposition. I don't think there is any, and I don't think you're going to get any from the Teamsters Union. I don't think any drivers will object. I don't think any trucking companies will object, but I certainly can't speak for everyone.
So you're comfortable then with it, hanging on to it until he's finished his inquiry?
I'm afraid I don't know enough about your system to know what a delay does. We'd like to get it done, but certainly understand it's needed.
Okay, thank you very much, Jim.
Thank you.
Can we go to teleconference? Are we hooked up now?
Yes, we are.
Is Anchorage only sight on? Anchorage, can you read us?
Hello?
Anchorage, can you hear us?
I'm awake.
Okay, fine, we'll proceed with Senate Bill 508. First, we'll have Patrick Owen.
For the record, my name is Patrick Owen, and I live here in Juneau, and I represent myself as a work laborer, a working man. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and fellow members, for giving me a chance to testify. Well, my name is Patrick Owen, and I'm a local resident here, and representing myself as a worker. I want to thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak. Mr. Chairman, I like your bill real well. For Chapter 2, I think that on the rehabilitation specialist, under Section 2 of Section 1 there, I think that's a real good part there. I think that there should be more scrutinizing of these rehabilitation specialists. And under Number 4, I'd like to see, I don't know if it's present now, I'd like to see them either registered or licensed to. Because I had a bad experience with one after coming off an injury. And I think it's real important that we get qualified people in there doing this work. And then under Section 2 of this bill, I'd like to see, if it's possible, maybe a cost of living clause on 60% of wages. I don't know whether that's possible or not, but as we know, cost of living can sometimes get pretty hard on a person if it's set at a base and things go up while he's getting his compensation. Kind of like the COLA system that the government uses.
What section was that?
That's Section 2 on under 3, 4, and 5.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's possible, but it should be helpful. kind of hard out there when you get injured on a job and you had a bunch of things that you bought when you were working and making good money, and then you have to try to make adjust your payments on that stuff and everything, and then costs go up and everything, and you're set at that amount of money.
Thank you. Is that
is all I have to say? Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Any? Part of section two of section three. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Feldman.
Sorry, I probably should have had Bob Andrews here first to go run a Souther bill, but you weren't on the top of the list, so we'll take you out here.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Robert Anders, and I was a member of the Alaska Workers' Compensation Board for approximately 4 years, and I co-chaired the Labor Management Committee, ad hoc committee, from 1987 through the passage of the 1988 amendments that were made to the Workers' Comp Act. By and large, the changes that we made, although extensive, seem to be working. Rates are coming down, and the amount of litigation involved in the process is also coming down, approximately 30%. The as hard as we tried to keep or cover all possible bases as far as problems that may develop because of the changes we were making, we cannot foresee all glitches that may come up from legislation. There were a few glitches that came up, and the bill before you right now addresses a few of those glitches. I did write a layman's version of a sectional analysis, of which I believe you have copies. And I can either answer questions or attempt to provide further explanation. The major changes that this bill would provide would be some realigning and rewriting of Section 401K, which is under the Work Rehab Clause of the Act, and it would also provide an exclusive remedy for insurance carriers and adjusters under the put them under the same umbrella as the employer when it comes to lawsuits outside of the workers' comp system in relationship to safety matters. If you would like me to, I can go through this thing section at a time, or if you've had a chance to review this sectional analysis, I can just answer questions.
Please, Plager. Can you tell us who was involved with beside yourself in this version?
As far as drafting this present legislation? Presently, I want to make it very clear, I'm not representing the Labor Management Ad Hoc Committee. I am presently working for Senator Kelly. I'm here to more or less safeguard the savings that we built into the Act in 1988. The changes that are needed under 041, which is work rehab, most of the language suggestions under 041 came from the Department of Labor. The Workers' Comp Committee of Alaska, or the WCCA, had some suggested language in reference to litigation. That language is not necessarily what we used. We do recognize that, I recognize that the workers' comp system, it has always been my belief, and I believe the belief of those working within the workers' comp system in Alaska, that the carrier had the same protection as the employer, until recent court decisions have affected that, the possibility of that. I think that this language that we're proposing will more or less take care of that concern and fulfill what we intended all along. This language also includes labor organizations because it's become apparent that they may need some protection as well as far as safety-related issues.
Thank you. Thank you.
Austin.
Pardon the labor.
My name is Rebecca Ostrom. I'm a hearing officer for the Workers' Compensation Division in the Department of Labor. Since Mr. Andrews has already talked about the bill briefly, I won't go through that. I would like to make one comment. Mr. Andrews did mention the ad hoc committee and the fact that in the past 8 years, the Department of Labor has had the ad hoc committee's efforts in introducing legislation and working on legislation that's been a consensus legislation. As a result, the Department of Labor often worked with individual members of the ad hoc committee, and Mr. Andrews and the staff provided technical support or advice to individual members so they could make their proposals to the committee. In the past, the legislation was always went through the committee and a consensus was reached before it was introduced as legislation. That did not occur with this piece of legislation. As far as we know, it's not supported by the ad hoc committee. The Department of Labor's position on Senate Bill 508, many of these sections are, as Mr. Andrews pointed out, are sort of housekeeping cleaning provisions, and so the department does support the provisions in Section 1, Section 2, Section 3, Section 4, Section 6, and Section 7. Section 5, of course, is not a cleanup of previous legislation. It is a response to a recent Supreme Court ruling.
Which, I'm sorry, would you repeat sections the department does support?
1 through 4,
one
and
through
then
four.
6 and 7.
And 6
and 7? Because they would go to sort of housekeeping or cleanup measures that we discovered before they were in the board had a meeting and discussed some of the problems, particularly addressed in subsection 3, were addressed at the board in November, and that was a recent decision has come out along the lines of subsection 3, so the department certainly supports that. Subsection 5 is not a cleanup of the 1988 amendments. It is a response to the recent Supreme Court ruling that said the safety inspection performed by an insurer, the insurer did not enjoy the exclusive remedy provision of the law. The department does not support this provision, this Section 5. The department's position is that the injured worker should have the benefit of being able to sue an organization that commits the negligence in doing a safety inspection. And that would make the safety inspection more accountable, both to the employer and the injured worker.
You're speaking of
Section 5, an exclusive remedy provision.
Section 5.
Of the proposed Senate Bill 508, exclusiveness of liability.
Okay, I guess this
do I not have the
analysis is wrong. Section 5, the analysis is something else.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well,
Section 2, the center, it's in the back of the last name of the section analysis.
Analysis, it says. Mine says provides for allowing licensed physical or occupational therapists to perform ratings of injured workers. That's what Section 5 in this analysis says, and she's talking about what you...
I was just talking about the bill. I don't have Mr. Andrews' analysis,
right, okay.
And
I
was just going through the sections by the bill. I'm sorry, I didn't realize you were...
That's fine. I'll just, the analysis is probably off. Fine.
Okay. Because the department does not support Section 5 of Senate Bill 508, it does not support the bill then. With this provision being included. It does support the other sections.
Does the department have any substitute language for that section?
No, the department does not support that language at all being included in this bill at all. The department would support cleanup of the 1988 amendments, but would not support language dealing with the expanding the exclusive liability provisions of the law.
Do you have any questions?
Sure.
Yes, thank you, through the chair. Prior to the Supreme Court case, how did the department handle the exclusiveness of liability?
Mr. Chairman, can you respond? I guess I should back up a little bit. Part of the problem with Section 5 and exclusive liability is that that's more of an insurance concern. It was not something that the department really had to handle. If someone had filed a lawsuit, I don't know. The department wouldn't have been involved if they tried to sue a negligence safety inspector. So it was not something that was ever addressed by the department before, as far as I know. Before, the employer, you know, the new language would just expand the definition of who an employer is, and before, in the past, under the Workers' Compensation Act, benefits were provided. This is part of the Workers' Compensation Act that says an employer can't be liable for negligence.
Yeah, but that's, so that's how it operated.
That's how it operated.
Right. Until the court case, I mean, everybody operated, and we, these things happen all the time. We operate under a certain set of procedures, or we think the law is the way, and then all of a sudden the court case comes along and makes it 180 degrees to what everybody was operating on. Okay? What I'm just trying to determine is, prior to the court case, the way Section 5 lays out the situation, was that kind of the status quo? Is that the way an employer did a safety inspection, and then as long as the safety inspection looked like it was handled appropriately, they couldn't be sued? I mean, was that the status quo of how the system was working?
I guess I would, in response to your question, I would have to guess or speculate that insurers, when they're doing the safety inspection, went on the assumption that they enjoyed the exclusive remedy provision that's in
the Act. So kind of the short answer is yes.
I guess, you know, the department really didn't get involved.
Okay, I understand. So then, the Supreme Court case reversed what the status, as you know it, the status quo of what the working world was like out there, between vis-a-vis an employer, the insurance agents, and all that kind of thing.
Well, again, I'm not privy to all those things, so I can't really say. I would assume, as any insurer would acknowledge, that lots of times they are operating under one set of assumptions, but they often set the reserves assuming something may happen anyway, so I can't really answer for
them. Okay, fine. Thank you.
Other questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Robert Blasco.
Good afternoon, Senator Page and Senator Coghill. I'm Bob Blasco, and I represent the American Insurance Association, and it's a pleasure to appear before you for the first time. And I would like to make a few comments about the section of the 508 that has just been talked about by Mr. Anders, and also the representative from the Department of Labor. That's what I think has been referred to as Section 5 under the exclusive liability. And it strikes me, as I'm hearing the two remarks before me, that nobody's addressed the real question, which is workplace safety, and how to best make a safe place for all workers in Alaska. And it seems self-evident that that's done through a cooperative effort by employees, employers, and by the insurers. And when the workplace is safe, everybody benefits. We have less injuries, we have more production. The employer pays less insurance premiums, the insurer pays less in claims. And that's a goal that we understand it always to have been, both through legislation and in practice. And I certainly echo, as Mr. Anders has said, that the understanding has always been that this was a cooperative venture, that the insurers were intended to be within the exclusive remedy for safety purposes. And I also echo what has been said, that's to be the status quo. Excuse me. The Van Veen case, as we've discussed it and has been pointed out, totally reversed that. And it seems, again, self-evident we should get back to the focus, which is workplace safety, get back to the cooperative venture. The legislature in 1988 passed a bill that required insurers to give rate reductions for good safety programs. With the new Supreme Court case, it's apparent that insurers cannot be a participant in the safety process without risking this exposure to unlimited liability and unlimited litigation. Unfortunately, I think Mr. Anders' statements that litigation is going down and premiums are going down will necessarily change now, already has changed, because of what will come out of the Van Veen case. This bill, well, again, I'm only addressing that section of the bill, and I should make it clear that I'm not, American Insurance Association is not taking any position on any other portion of the bill. But that portion of the bill certainly gets back to the focus, workplace safety, and I guess I would certainly, on behalf of American Insurance Association, urge you to keep the bill in its present form and not change that language that does return us to the status quo and gets back to the ability of the insurers to continue to participate in a cooperative goal of a safe workplace. Thank you.
Questions, committee? Thank you. Maybe we can go to Anchorage? Linda Glick?
Yes, thank you. Can you hear me?
We can hear you, not very loud, but go ahead.
I'm an occupational therapist here in Anchorage, Alaska, and I'm here to speak on behalf of this bill. My name is Linda Glick, and basically I'm here to answer any questions that you may have about portions that pertain to licensed physical and occupational therapists participating in impairment rating and in determining whether a person is capable of returning to work. Are there any questions that you would like to ask me?
Thank you. Question from me. Thank you very much. Liz Dower.
I'm Liz Dower, and I'm also a registered occupational therapist in Anchorage. I have been performing performance-based physical capacities evaluations for the past 5 years, and we are relating to physical capacities in terms of being performance-based as opposed to the opinion-based physical capacity evaluations done by physicians and the patients, period. We often see that what in fact happens is the physician asks the patient what he can do and not do. In cases of about 500 people that I've seen, 400 of those people, in fact, could not tell you what they could do and not do. And so many times decisions were being based on people's suggestions of what they might be able to do and not do related to their job, and were in fact not very accurate. By doing performance-based physical capacities evaluations, not only they, but their employer and physician were able to find out what in fact they could exactly do, how much they can lift, carry, how much they can actually perform and relate to their exact jobs. The other part of that is that occupational therapists often go to work sites and see the jobs for themselves, and not only can state whether a person can actually do the job or not do the job, but make recommendations that often will enable the person to go back to work rather than simply stating they can't do that. Many times I see that one or two jobs, the task could be changed so that they were able to do it or modified in such a way that it's not a difficulty to anyone. Next, and related to impairment ratings, therapists have not done impairment ratings in the past. The new book put out by the American Medical Association that refers to doing impairment ratings, the third edition, does in fact state that a physician does not have to be the one to do these ratings, but in fact it can be done by other medical professionals. If one looks at the very normal reports, both evaluation reports, daily progress sheets, final reports done by therapists, it is extremely typical of those reports that they all include range of motion, strength, activities of daily living, and all relation to the physical activities performed by persons with disabilities. All of these are now expected to be part of the impairment rating process, and physicians often get the information directly from therapists to make those suggestions rather than getting all the information themselves. After reviewing that, it is very clear to the therapist that we are able to do the impairment rating. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I think I have one question, and that is section analysis says this is intended to speed up the rating process. Do you agree?
Yes, I do. We often can do a physical capacities evaluation much earlier, I would say two and three months earlier, and sometimes 6 months earlier than they've been performed in the past. If we can also determine if they're not stable at that point, and we do one and we say, gee, there seems to be these kind of problems, and refer them back, that can actually happen much faster. That'll speed the medical process up to get that kind of treatment, get that solution resolved, and then complete
the process again.
Now, thank you very much. Any questions, Mr. Kinnear? Thank you. We'll come back to Juneau, John George.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is John George. I'm here today representing the National Association of Independent Insurers. I, too, would like to speak to Section 5 of the bill. It would seem to us that it's important that safety and loss control programs do take place, and that the state should be encouraging these programs as opposed to discouraging them. In the early 1970s, the state of Alaska was doing inspections on a hotel. There was an alleged negligent inspection done. The hotel burned down. People were killed. The state was sued. The court found the state liable because they had done a faulty inspection. And immediately, all state agencies stopped doing inspections. They came to the legislature and they asked for essentially what the insurance industry is asking for here. They said, give us some immunity because we think the public need is for the inspection. And if you hold us liable, we're not going to do the inspection. It's discretionary and we don't have to do them. And if you're going to sue us for doing faulty inspections, we're not doing them anymore. So all state agencies essentially got immunity through statute so that they could resume doing safety, building inspections, elevator inspections, boiler inspections. So you've heard Department of Labor saying that they feel that insurance companies ought to be held liable for this, when in fact the Department of Labor is not held liable for their own faulty inspections if they should do one. But we think that everyone ought to be in there aggressively pushing for safety, and that the way to do that is to encourage people to do it. Now, we have a compensation system, the workman's compensation system, and it's designed to give the injured worker compensation. So it's not like we're depriving him of any recovery. It's been looked at very carefully and decided this is what the injured worker gets for his injury. And it's not like we're saying he gets nothing. He's got a recovery. Now let's work on the other end, try and reduce the injuries. We can probably reduce the workman's comp premium, and therefore everyone would benefit. There is another proposal, a House bill, that would increase the premium tax on workers' comp insurance, would essentially give that to the Department of Labor so they could hire more state employees to do safety inspections. And so really, if you look at this bill versus that bill, we're really talking about, do you want to increase taxes and expand state government to do this function, or do you want to not increase taxes, not increase government, and let the private industry do it? Private industry has a cost incentive, and we feel that that's an appropriate way to do it, although we're certainly not discouraging Department of Labor from doing safety inspections either. We think everyone should be doing it. That ought to be the prime focus. And so we would support Section 5 staying in this bill. We think it's important. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman, if I may just ask a few questions. First of all, are you familiar to go over the court case with me? Never mind.
Vaguely. No, I'm probably not. We could certainly provide someone who could do that.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you, John.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Kevin Dougherty.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Kevin Dougherty. I'm the co-chair on the Labor Management Ad Hoc Committee. And before I forget, Mr. Chairman, I would like to mention to Senator Fates that I am aware of the Van Beam case, and any questions you may have, I'd be glad to answer if I could.
Mr. Chairman, I just feel like before we can adequately discuss Section 5, and I've got to go too, and so I don't want to belabor this, but to me, before we can adequately hear all these pros and cons on Section 5, we have to know what the court case did to change the status quo. You have to know the elements of the court case, and I've been trying to read it, and so I just, maybe you can address some of those elements vis-a-vis how it changed the system, because it did seem to interpret Alaska statute differently than had been operating.
I would be more than grateful to answer any questions about that. I find it interesting that prior speakers haven't studied or read the case but yet have an opinion. I would not characterize the current state of Alaskan law as being a departure
from prior law, or in this state, nor in the law 48. So I want to address that in the context of my statement to you, but if you do have a prior commitment, perhaps we could talk very quickly about that, Senator?
I'll go with you, Chairman. Go ahead. Please.
Thank you. As I was saying, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I have had the opportunity to be on the ad hoc committee since 1981. And in that 9-year period in which the ad hoc committee has been active, and considering reform of the worker compensation system, we have taken an informed approach and a balanced approach with both labor and management, studying the problems or alternatives or proposed legislation which would amend the Work Comp Act. And it's a very serious act, as you know, to both employers and labor in the state, and certainly to our legislature. And I believe we've been successful in not only looking at major rate reductions. 1988, we had a rate reduction of 7.5. This year, I think the effective across-the-board rate increase is 4.1%. From the labor community, I'm proud that we have been able to offer that to employers, and it in turn benefits all people in this state. This bill represents a departure from the ad hoc committee working together to look at solutions to the work comp system. This is not an ad hoc committee bill. This bill is not supported by the ad hoc committee. Labor and management have not had the opportunity to study the bill. The bill has changed 3 times since I was given a draft of it in January. To discuss the case, and Senator Fakes is still here, and I'd like to do that. I have a copy of it, and it's certainly available if you'd like to look at. The case concerns 2 pilots who were killed in Galkana in a plane crash. The allegations are that the safety inspection was not done properly, and that resulted in the death of 2 Alaskan pilots. If the finding of the court at the end of the hearing, or the end of the trial, is that there was no negligence, there will be no liability of the insurance carrier in this situation. The important thing is that we'll have a day in court to find out whether or not the deaths of these 2 pilots was caused by negligence by the carrier performing the safety inspections. Specifically, the facts relate to the pilots being dispatched about 2 o'clock in the morning after many hours of being on the job, and there was a question whether or not they had been overly exerted and kept too long at work that day. That's not a question I can answer. That's a question for a jury in this state to answer, whether or not the families of those two pilots should in fact be compensated for the loss. There had been a comment earlier, Mr. Chairman, about this being fixing a glitch in the system. It's a major substantive change in the law. The ad hoc committee would have looked at more than the superficial level of whether or not we think this is a change in the status quo, what someone may have thought would have occurred before the law. What we would have looked at, and we began studying when the ad hoc committee became aware that they were working on this thing, we started looking at what do they do in the other states that have the law similar to how we have it here in Alaska. Van Bean is not an aberration. There are many states in Law 48 that allow an injured worker or the estate, in the case of a death, to protect themselves through an action, a civil action in court. This is not there are 8 states, and they are noted in a footnote in the opinion. And you could study that at length. Hopefully later on, the committee would take a full view of this problem. In addition, anyone looking at taking a full, informed look at this problem would look to the treaties put out by Professor Arthur Larson to see what he might have to say in the cases that he's looked at, in cases in which people are injured or killed because of an alleged negligent safety inspection by the carrier. It's not a new issue. Since 1960, there have been cases that have dealt with this across the country. There are 18 pages that discuss the issue. It's not a superficial question which this committee should take lightly, and I'm sure you won't. The solution put forward, which includes labor organizations, I need you to understand, we did not ask for labor organizations to be included in that the bailout, as we refer to it.
In fact, we would prefer that not be included, because I think that's offensive to the public and certainly offensive to anyone concerned about having a balanced worker compensation system in the state. The questions of constitutionality, which have been looked at in the lower 48 when these kind of cases come up, hasn't been addressed. The proponents of the bill haven't even talked about it to you, and I haven't seen the position paper, but I have a feeling it's not addressed, or perhaps we would have heard about it. So we're concerned about just the substance of what's going on in Section 5. The other thing I'd like to make mention to the committee, since I know we've worked throughout the last 9 years, and all three of you have been here for 9 years. I've been here, my short tenure. And I think we've produced some help for the employer, certainly in terms of reduced benefits amounting to somewhere in the neighborhood of $15 million over the past few years. We've always done that under the commitment of having a balanced, fair approach to the work comp system. And what we would have done this year is looked at, did labor have any concerns about the failings of the system? And yes, we do have concerns. The first one, if I might, Mr. Chairman, I'll just run down what these three are, because you haven't had a chance to be informed about this, and it's not part of the bill. The first one concerns the lack of compensation for health care insurance. And let me explain that by saying, in the event that an employee is injured during his employment, he's compensated for his lost wages, and 80% expendable. And that's been agreed upon since 1988. In this case, when an employee is injured, there's no compensation for lost health insurance that covers himself nor his family. We would suggest, and would have suggested if we had a continuation of the ad hoc committee, that we look at a fair and equitable solution to a practical problem out there. We need to address the vocational rehabilitation problem, as the intent was in 1988. We intended to allow voc rehabilitation to continue as a benefit. It hasn't worked out that way, and I think the proof's in the pudding. We had 10,000 injuries in 1988. Only seven people have had a voc rehab plan. So we think there's a failing when only seven people have had the benefit of voc rehab, and there were that many injuries in this state. We want to take a look at that. I don't want to offer a hasty response, as I think has occurred in this bill, and tell you that we ought to open the doors up and have too many employees on voc rehab that don't deserve it. That's not right either. We don't propose that. What we suggest that the committee do is look at a fair and equitable and informed approach to that. The prior speaker, Mr. George, made mention about safety requirements. We, too, believe that that's a good issue to look at. And it can be done in this state. We're not the only state that has talked about safety. Some states have actually done something about it. And things can be done to prevent an accident so employees don't get hurt and there's no cost to be borne by the employer. They're very important issues. They haven't been aired in the ad hoc committee. We haven't had the opportunity to talk to your committee about this, Mr. Chairman. We believe the bill should at least be held, with all due respect, until we can talk with you on an informed level about both the issue of the Van Bean case and also three concerns that we have. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Biggs?
No, sir, but the case is very, very interesting, and I can easily stand corrected because I've been sitting here listening and reading at the same time, so I could certainly make lots of errors in determining this, but basically, the court ruled the way it did. They said there was no negligence against ERA. They dismissed that part of it, that the ERA was not negligent in sending those pilots out. But they said that because there was nothing in Alaska law under the workman's comp section that exclusively eliminated what happened is the insurance carrier inspected ERA prior to giving them their insurance. Because they inspected ERA and there was nothing in the statutes that says the carrier is excluded from liability here, the court said there's no exclusivity in the statutes, therefore it's up to the legislature to determine this, therefore you could sue the third party, the insurance carrier, because they certified that they inspected ERA. Error had no liability, but because the insurance carrier said they inspected, they had the liability. So you've got a right to sue them. And they didn't, they just remanded it back to the lower court for determination. And they've got a line in here that says it's up to the legislature. Let's see, this type of policy determination is appropriately left for the legislature. And we therefore conclude there's nothing in the statutory language of the Alaska scheme which prevents an employer from bringing a negligence action against a carrier for negligence inspection of the employer's workspace because it's not exclusively excluded in the workman's comp bill. So you got to know the issues of this court case before we can talk about Section 5, in my opinion.
I agree, Senator.
Was that fair assessment?
Yes, it is. It,
okay. I know it's a little strange.
It's complicated, but... That you're the only person I've talked to in the last few days who's even read the case, so
well,
I appreciate
but
that.
What amazes me is they find no negligence against Eric.
No, the employer, of course, that issue would not be heard because it's barred by the Work Comp Act, and the employer, whether he's negligent or not, is shielded. And there's a proper trade-off in that the employee gets a lower form of compensation. He doesn't get a civil damage liability in the millions sometimes. He gets his weekly paycheck, or 80% of that. That's a fair balance. If you take away the right of action against...
What I also find... Well, I've lost my... You know, this is just... never mind. I lost it. I know what I was going to say. What the court points out here is that if you hold the insurance companies responsible for their inspections, would that not cause fewer inspections, or will the insurance company simply say this inspection was not meant to be thorough and absolutely wonderful, and therefore we're going to not have any liability on this? I mean, aren't they just, you know, insurance companies are awfully sneaky, and aren't they just going to kind of get around this with another couple of small prints on their policies, and won't worker safety go down? I mean, that's what I'd be afraid of.
Well, of course, they can't, through their policy, have any impact on the employee's rights. They can't cause the employee to waive any right by the language, and I have those suspicions of insurance companies, but I try to be fair on that. But to answer the question about whether it would have an effect on safety inspections, it depends. In many states that is in footnote 13 that follow the Van Deen rule, I've had an opportunity to check through our national office, and they still do safety inspections in Illinois, Vermont, you went across the country, those states that do that, they still have safety inspections. So we don't know if that's a Trojan horse that's being trotted out there to get this legislature to do something in a hasty manner. I'm willing, and we're willing to look at that because that is of concern. If there's a bona fide rationale for it, then we in turn want to look at that. And that's what the ad hoc committee had offered. We were able to save funds from employers where we could see it wouldn't hurt the employees. In those cases where it's a Trojan horse, we had to say no. And we had a good relationship for 9 years, and this is a departure from that. And we think that we'd like to have at least this committee, if not the ad hoc committee, have your committee study this before we get going too fast down the road on it.
Thank you. In reference to your comment, you haven't talked to anybody who has really got into this case. Have you made an effort to see any members of this committee since been here to talk about it?
I have talked to Senator Kelly's aide, Bob Anders. This is my first time. I've been in Juneau, and I just got in this morning. I mean, first time this week. So I have not, Senator, and,
well,
I'm willing to
come to the committee members at your opportunity and try to discuss it so we can treat them more informed.
Certainly.
But don't lay at us. We're not talking to you.
No. That's not my intent to say that you had not talked to me. I understand that, you know, we contact our legislators. But what I'm saying is the proponents of the bill have not. I haven't heard from the insurance industry, nor has anyone from labor had a call from the insurance industry. When we had the ad hoc committee, we had the ability to talk to the industry, and that's not occurring.
Thank you very much. Any further questions?
We need page 20 and 22 in the court case.
I have 22.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have one further, Dave Hutchins?
I would only clarify the brief that you may stop.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Dave Hutchins, Executive Director of the Alaska Rural Electric Co-op Association. And I'm hesitant to get into what appears to be a tug of war between some employers and some unions, but I'm here to speak on behalf of Section 5 of the bill to tell you that from our perspective, it is absolutely essential that something of this sort be enacted and be enacted soon, or we're going to see a very serious downgrading of safety effort in the state. And I'm not talking theory. Let me tell you a little bit where we fit into this in relation to that issue. For 11 years now, our association has had an insurance program that has evolved through the years, and for a number of years now, it's been organized as a reciprocal insurer, the Eureka Insurance Exchange. Also for 11 years, we've had a safety program that has been paid for out of funds transferred over from the insurance program. And the major thrust of that has been to improve workplace safety for the employees of our members across the state, and secondarily to assist with public safety when members of the public dealing with electricity. And the Van Veen case, I have read it, I have studied it, I've had opinions on it from our lawyer and studied those, and it did in fact turn the law of this state on its head, as understood by us and every other workers' comp insurer in this state. And I agree with the last gentleman that there are a number of other states that whose law is like the law of Alaska now after Van Veen, but there are many others that had the pre-Van Veen interpretation, that kind of statutory scheme, just as we've had in this state. And when the Van Veen case occurred, it took us a while for it to sink in as to what had really happened to us. And then in the fall, our safety specialist retired, and by that time we were up on what had happened, and our board took a look at this. And from our perspective, what it amounts to is that we, as the reciprocal insurer, now have unlimited liability separate from the terms of the workers' comp policy for whatever may happen at the job site, if it can somehow be related to a failure of our safety program to not be 100% perfect in some respect. That is a liability that our board is unwilling to accept. And rather than having a deep pocket for somebody to dip into, you're not going to have these safety inspections being performed. In our case, I can tell you very specifically, our board has terminated our safety program for the time being. I have persuaded them to let me go ahead and hire a new safety man who will be coming on in April. But until there is some restoration of the pre-Van Veen situation, it is our board's firm determination that we will not be involved in workplace safety, but that we will work on public safety. And I think that's a most unfortunate situation, that our board feels we have absolutely no choice but to terminate workplace safety programs that can anyway be regarded as workplace inspections, safety inspections. And you know, we've done a good job through the years with our safety program of reducing the frequency and severity of the accidents on the job. But we simply cannot accept this unlimited liability. We're not going to be that kind of a deep pocket. We just have no choice but to withdraw from the safety program. I would suggest some refinement of the language in that section. On line 16, page 5, it says after self-insured employer, after that phrase, I would insert a trade association in that list. And again, same amendment on line 17, after insurance service agent, trade association. And the reason for that is that although our safety program is funded by our insurance program, it's handled through the association. That's a common practice for the trade association to be the entity that provides the safety services for the employer. And we provide safety services for other electric utilities in the state who do not have their insurance through our exchange. And we would otherwise need to terminate safety services to them. Even if you pass this, we'd have to eliminate the safety programs for the people that are not in our insurance program without that amendment. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dave. Would you, there was some reference made to Bill on the other side. Could you tell us what that option would do?
It would increase our taxes and give money for somebody else to spend for safety. We're not sure how it'd be spent or what it would do, but we do know it would increase our taxes.
What would that do to your liability, though?
Nothing.
Yeah, because, see, the state's immune from the liability. I mean, it's a state inspection, and years ago, in a previous court case, the state got itself immune. That mentions this in court case.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That takes care of Juneau. Is there anyone else to care to testify on the bill? How about Anchorage? Nobody home? Anchorage, you there?
Hello?
Is this Anchorage?
Yes. We didn't know if you was talking to Anchorage. I care to testify.
Proceed.
For the record, my name is Charles McKee. And one point I'd like to bring out is the cost is borne by the consumer, which consequently is an employee that might have to be injured on the job. So keep that in mind.
I ran out of
because all costs are borne by the consumer, regardless of whether it occurs and who's liable. As I understand, the federal government, the state government, and the municipalities, the boroughs, those entities have immunity and are exempt. An entity that wishes to or maintains a profit incentive, they wish to be exempt or have immunity. Sets rural sour with me. Individuals within these before mentioned concepts, they should not have total immunity or exemption.
Municipalities are not.
In reference to the people that the rehabilitation specialists, I don't know, I'm not an expert, but I certainly have experience, as you well know, and I by the advice of my past counsel went to the rehab place here in Anchorage, and they turned me down because we had filed it in U.S. District Court, thankfully, I was out of their jurisdiction, even though they received I don't know what the real percentage is. I was told 90% of monies from the Fed. I was turned down because it was filed under Admiralty of IE Maritime, and so I was out the door. And on top of that, my particular injury was internal. You could find it if you went into an MIR machine. But other than that, I looked at this PG King. But it was serious, life threatening. My intent was in this occupation. Fortunately, I was capable of proving my intent was to become self-employed in assisting grandparents and children's education in doing so. And that's not included in this bill in reference to rehab people and determining whether the individual could go back to the workplace. It was never my intention to maintain a livelihood from the commercial fishing industry. It was simply to receive, to get a lump sum bundle of cash together to go into this other program of self-employment, entrepreneurial aspect, and not to be maintain an employee-employer relationship, but to help our collective economic welfare in my interests. And in this, the word predicted by the therapist, that you have to take into account the individual experience. It can't be, you know, a predicted situation of some. And in reference to the lump sum, I'm wondering if we ever would like to consider the citizen exempt. You know, and I was wondering about the lump sum. Is that exempt from the IRS? And that's, I guess, would be in section 3 on line 11 of the third page. When they're talking about the employee lump sum and when he's terminated for permanent impairment benefit.
Thank you, Mr. McKee.
This call is already exempt. Are you still there? Can you hear me?
Mr. McKee, we'll be coming back to this bill in the near future, so thank you very much.
I'm not finished yet.
Thank you.
I'm not finished yet, sir.
We'll give you a couple more minutes. Go ahead.
Right. Let me quickly go to this much talked about section 5. I would like to include both Admiralty and or Maritime. I would like to say that the reinsurers wish not to, and I mentioned reinsurers, not insurance, because it goes back to the reinsurers. They wish not to be penalized, even though they're involved in actually incurring cheating by insurance training schools that train prospective people to pass state exams to sell insurance policies within a given state. And I'm referring to this state and Stephen Walls Insurance Training School that operated in Alaska as well as Washington and three other states that I had been made privy to while I was outside looking for legal counsel as well as medical. And the lady turned state evidence against the firm, and she was prior partner in it. And so it goes back to actually that, and the fact that they don't police themselves. The reinsurers do not police themselves. And the reason why I didn't apply for this Pagmore receivership situation, because I was aware of the reason why they didn't have the money, because it was never deposited, or some of the money was never deposited once the policies were sold by these floating independents. And so I couldn't justify going against the poor stockholders that lose their equity and got only 15 cents on the dollar, knowing that aspect. I'm not a gold digger. All I wanted to do is become self-employed and assist in the community that I live in. And so here I am still without compensation, let alone legal representation, by the conduct of the reinsurers. If they wish to stop doing business in the state, please leave the equity in the state when they stop doing business. And that includes the holdings of the insurance industry that does business in the state. But maybe we could deposit in the permanent fund. So with that, I agree with Section 5. And also, allow the employee to have a choice in the position and the recommended treatment. In my case, it was pretty serious surgery, and you don't just take one physician's recommendation. You would like to have at least a second or a third, especially if it's a life-threatening situation. And I end my comment. Thank you for listening to me.
Thank you, Mr. McKee. That's it. Cut it off. Mr. McKee is here every day.
In every committee.
He's an attorney.
No, he's not an attorney. He's a fisherman. That's why he's here every day in the winter.
We'll take up Senate Bill 451, civil liability. We're just going to take short testimony of this bill. We just want to hear it briefly. It's a judiciary subject, but we have it in the committee. We're going to pass it out if possible and send it down to the Senator Fakes' committee.
Boy, it cleans the place out.
Yeah.
Arlen's still here.
Well, Arlen, come forward quick. We have been through this bill a number of times, a number of sessions.
There's nothing new in this bill.
But if you just give us some testimony, we'll be good. We're not on tiptoe conference.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Harlan Knudsen of the Health Association of Alaska. And speaking really today on behalf of a coalition of individual citizens from around the state who've been working on tort reform for a number of years now. And just briefly, the coalition is made up from all walks of life, and one of the points that I want to make with the committee is that Senate Bill 451 is designed to deal with the tragic problems of liability, and you heard it earlier on the airplane crash and all of a sudden the liability of the safety inspector. It's trying to bring some order to our legal system and to our civil, to our liability system. But speaking strongly in support of Senate Bill 451, much of what is contained in Senate Bill 451 was contained in House Bill 85, passed by the Senate several times in previous sessions. To point out the concern about the liability issue, I just call your attention to our legislative digest of bills. There are currently 37 bills dealing with the issue of liability, plus 5 concurrent resolutions, 2 joint resolutions, 3 House resolutions for 47 different pieces of legislation, all asking for the legislature's help on the issue of liability. 2 of the bills, I think, point out real interestingly some of the problems. I'm reading from Senate Bill 268. This is a bill in regards to joint insurance, but I want you to read the purpose, the intent of the bill. The legislature finds dramatic increases in the cost of liability and other insurance coverage for municipalities has adversely affected municipal budgets and has even increased insurance premiums and coverage, and oftentimes is not available. Here is your municipalities asking for help. This one, I can take one more second because it sums up our field, the healthcare field. And again, this is House Bill 350 over on the House side. But it says the cost of medical malpractice insurance has forced many healthcare providers to become uninsured, which exposes the healthcare provider and patients to unreasonable risk, forces some healthcare providers to cease their medical practice, and also acts as a general disincentive to practice medicine in the state. The number of healthcare providers in the state on a per capita basis is among the lowest in the nation. Our liability problems prevent the ability to attract new physicians. Now, I think this is an interesting piece of legislation because it's sponsored by two highly thought of legislators, Representative Donnelly and Representative Grunberg. And here, kind of from the other side of the fence, they recognize the issue. The proponents, the representatives from the healthcare or from the Tort Reform Coalition, and you've got the studies, you've got the breakdown, but some of the contents of this legislation will positively impact the problems we're faced in this state. We urge you to pass Senate Bill 451 forward. I have a summary of the bill here if you'd like to have it. We'd be glad to answer questions if you have any, either on the bill itself or the Jackson Power section.
Thank you, Harlan. Any questions in the committee? That's right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Gross?
No. It's nice to have someone come back to finally change your position. You going to support the bill this time?
It's a long day. I won't take much of your time. Senator Lyerson, I understand that you want to move on this bill quickly, and I'm not going to spend a great deal of time going through it. I'll just say two things very briefly. First of all, this is not the tort reform bill that you have considered in the past. There are some radical new things in this bill, and as I say, I'm not going to go through them with you, but I only ask that before the Senate and the individual senators on this committee really do take affirmative action on this bill, that they please give us a chance to at least point out to them on a section-by-section basis what we're talking about, because there's some really serious problems in here that I don't think anybody on this committee would support, frankly, even if you support tort reform. There are things in this bill which I think were just put in as kind of like argumentative points, and they're way beyond, I think, what anybody here would support. So please at least give me the opportunity to do that when the occasion arises.
I promise.
Okay. The second thing is... The second thing is, and I just want to say this as Harlan has talked about the general problem. You know, I've been with this problem for like 6 years now. I mean, as long as you have. And I've listened to even more testimony than you have. And the one thing that's really bothering me about this whole thing is that there is a legitimate problem out there. There is no question about it. You know, I've come to that conclusion. I had doubts about it to start with. I'm absolutely convinced. There is major problems in terms of medical malpractice insurance. There are major problems in terms of certain medical specialties, particularly OBGYN, particularly OB. And there are serious problems in rural areas of Alaska in terms of being able to get doctors who can afford health insurance, malpractice. No question about it. The problem with this is that if you take this bill and you pass it, I mean any kind of bill that you would support, and I say that recognizing that our views may differ on this subject, but any kind of view that you could rationally support, you may slow the increase of medical malpractice rates, or you may even keep them stable. Right. But the kind of testimony that I've heard for years and years isn't talking about that medical malpractice rates are climbing too fast, or that they're 2% too high, or that if you could only lower them by 5%, life would be better. They're talking about rates that they can't afford 50% of. I mean, they're talking about rates which are so out of line with what they can afford in places like Nemana or places like Bethel or places like, you know, that don't generate the kind of business that a Providence hospital generates, or even specialties in Providence Hospital, that nothing in this bill is going to solve the problem or even come close to solving the problem. And the one difficulty with spending all the time on this that we spend year after year after year is that you never do grapple with the real problem, which is in our interest to get solved as well as the doctor's interest, because it's on our backs. Each year we have to deal with this kind of legislation. There is a legitimate problem, but there's just a House commission that's come out with a study, a whole bunch of studies, the House of Representatives, Sam Cotton's organization over there, and David Rogers has put together a whole bunch of studies that have come out on the effect of tort reform, right? And I urge you, please, to just look at them, because you will learn that even if we differ, on this, that even if everything the doctors say is you pass, it will not have a significant impact on malpractice rates. And so we stand here and we argue about this all the time, and the problem never goes away. So I hope sometime or another, in the course of discussing this or discussing something else, we actually get to the point of how to drop medical malpractice rates in rural areas, because this isn't going to do it. There are things that will do it, but this kind of thing won't. Okay, having said that, I'll harass.
Thank you.
It's your intent to move it over to
my intent to get it out of here.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Fakes.
I move we move Senate Bill 451 from committee with individual recommendations.
Any objections? Motion carried.
Why don't we do that? Darn.
And I would accept Senator Frank's bill, whichever you want. If you don't ask for I know Mr. Frank Jay, the lawyer, talked. And they've reached an agreement as far as
I signed that with a pencil, sorry.
I signed in the grocery store. It helped me with
the meeting, Inspector. We have a ongoing bill here. I would like to get out. I haven't had a chance to read the amendments, but I understand that it's amendments that have worked out with Senator Frank and insurance people.
which deal with the May 7th of Senate Bill 309.
Is that this additional highlighted one?
No, it's just, here's the...
Or is this new amendments after this one?
Do you want me to...
Go ahead, if you would, Steve.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The amendment that I believe you have in your packet addresses the concerns expressed by the industry. I'll run through those amendments quickly if you'd like. They changed the effective date to January 1st, 91, which gives a little additional time for the industry to comply, print forms and such. And it requires that the exclusion notice be signed by the insured to be valid, so it's very clear that they know that the exclusion exists. We removed the words use of to make sure that we were not talking about the named excluded person if they were sitting in the car as a passenger, and we felt that if we used the words use of, that it could be construed that sitting in the car as a passenger is using the vehicle. We clarified that the coverage would not extend to in any way from operation of the automobile by the excluded individual. We clarified that language, including the, where it says the including the defense or indemnity coverage under any provision of the policy for damages, including claims other than persons insured under the policy. So
where does that fit? Where's that fit, Steve? In the bill.
Page 2, line 7.
On line. No, the first one you have. Page 2, line 5.
Oh.
I got the damage or out, and I got the use or out, but I'm not sure I know where the.
Okay.
It doesn't show here. It doesn't. After 4.
Yeah, it should
say after 4, insert.
That's correct. I'm sorry.
After 4, insert.
Yes, that's right. After 4.
For any coverage, including defense
indemnity or coverage under any provision of the policy for damages, including claims against other persons insured under the policy.
Claim. How does that fit in there with? And then you take out. It doesn't. We got a problem.
You think that's a problem? I'm sorry, they just dropped this on us about 10 minutes ago.
What I would suggest is that. That let's talk about the intent here, and I see the intent. Why don't we just accept the amendments and then put it into the bill so that it's in good form?
Let me can I make a suggestion that we what we did was we had it handwritten there, and it took the legislative legal department a little bit of time to do it. And it might be more convenient to work from the handwritten copy than to work with the one that is prepared.
But you don't need to delete damage or them in your amendment thing. You don't.
Why don't we ask the insurance person if this is what we're trying to get at? Do you have any problems with these amendments?
Let me just share it on the record.
So we clear this up.
I'm in the same position that Senator Frank is, that the handwritten copy is what we've been working from, and I don't think that the amendments that are here completely track the handwritten copy.
Right.
They don't.
Why don't we just start all over again? Why don't you get together with him and Sheila and bring us something next week, because we can't pass it up anyway, a rough draft of a committee substitute, and everybody sign off on it, and we'll get rid of it, okay?
Yeah. Bring it back Monday.
Thank you. Apologize for not being able to...
That's all right. We understand this. No, we're trying hard to make a deadline, then we couldn't quite reach it.
You want this back?
Thank you,
Mr. Chairman. This back.